Hello, everyone. This is Jay, and this
Hi.
Is my wife, Casey. And this is a little show we call The View from Bomax Point. Welcome back, friends. Thanks for listening. If you are just jumping in to our podcast for the first time at this episode, this is kind of a part two because we're talking about the subject of race and racism and how we talk to our children about those things. We've got a diverse family with adopted children who have darker skin than us, don't look like us. And so this cultural moment that we're in right now where everyone's talking about race relations and police officers and Black Lives Matter and all of this that's going on, we're having a discussion about that. And our discussion has run long. And so our goal is to keep these things, you know, 30, 40 minutes tops so that it's a not exactly bite size, but small enough that you can sit down when you have a little break over lunch, commute to work, something like that, and catch what we have to say. And so we're jumping in now to the rest of what we didn't say the first time. We'd gotten a ways in and realized we have a whole bunch left to say and didn't want to just keep dragging it out. So we're going to pick back up and talk a bit more about like what we want our children to hear from us, how we want to encourage them to think about race and what that means and racism and in America, our culture, our home, and all of that. So thanks for coming back. If you listened to the first part, thanks for checking back in, I guess, and listening in to the rest of our conversation.
Yes. If you find yourself here, go back and listen to part one.
Yeah. It'll make a lot more sense because we're not going to recap the first however many minutes we went just in order to get started into this one. This whole concept, this whole idea of race creates division. It divides families, divides cultures, it divides nations of people because we are focusing so much on race when race doesn't even exist in the sense that we're talking about. Now, that doesn't mean that we should pretend that history never happened, that slavery never happened, that racism doesn't exist, but we should keep it in perspective. I mean, if we want to talk about the history of racism, we need to go way back beyond the founding of America or the beginning of the African slave trade.
Well, slavery did not start in America.
Right, of course. And in fact, slavery was, in essence, first eradicated in the West, right? In parts of Europe and America. Yes, Americans and Europeans participated in the wicked slave trade, where people are going into Africa and kidnapping or, interestingly, buying slaves from other Africans. And yes, white Europeans and Americans participated in that. And that's wicked. That's man-stealing. And go read your Old Testament and see what God has to say about man-stealing and how heinous of a crime it is. So we don't have to be ignorant and say that this didn't happen, this history didn't happen.
Right.
But we should realize that hatred, racism, slavery, all of those things go way beyond
19th century.
Yeah, the 19th century and the Civil War. And we can rejoice that at least in our nation, slavery is no longer in existence, at least legally. I mean, we have sex slavery and terrible things still happening in the world. But in terms of having the support of the law, that has been eradicated in America, in the West, and in many places in the world, though not entirely.
You know, something that I want to mention, since we're talking a little bit about history, I think it's important to learn history, but learn it all around. And I think I was somewhat naive about some of the history of the African Americans in the United States. And I just happened to come across a group in social media. And they brought up a topic about slaves and how they had read about alligators being used as a form of punishment to attack or kill slaves. And this person was sharing how their child, this was, you know, like 2 years ago I read this, like nothing, we're not talking about 1900s, you know, but someone had called her out about her child, her African-American child, liking alligators. And someone called her out and said how she was being a terrible mother about letting her child have this alligator toy, this alligator birthday. Well, don't you know what that stands for in the South? And this, you know, and I was reading that and I was like, this is so wrong. So wrong. This is not this mother's fault. This is, do not blame her. Don't force her to think her, she is in sin or she's being sinful because her 2-year-old likes alligators. And that was somewhat related to this past of this child. And I was flabbergasted by it, to be honest. And I'm sorry, but that sin is not my sin. I am not to be made to feel guilty because of sins of the past.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't sinned against my child because they have an alligator t-shirt.
Yeah, I don't know how, with that specific example, I don't know how prevalent that was. That's not something I've heard of before. But if we're, it brings up the point, if we have to get rid of everything that has some wicked association in the past, mm-hmm. what would be left? I mean, do we stop using ships because ships were used to transport slaves from Africa to the Americas and to Europe?
Yeah.
Is that any more ridiculous?
Should we stop using cotton because slaves picked cotton out of the cotton field?
Should we only make sure that our adopted children don't wear any cotton clothes because of that? I mean, how absurd.
Right. And we shouldn't be made to feel guilty.
Right. But it's just this. An example of this selective outrage.
Right.
You know, that there are certain things that are racist and hateful, but we're going to ignore this whole other. I mean, look, some people are going to be mad at me because in a conversation about the subject of race and racism in America, that I had the audacity to bring up the fact that a black person is whatever, 10, 15 times more likely to be murdered by another black person than they are to be murdered by a white person. Some people might listen to that and say that I'm racist for even bringing that up. But that's what we're dealing with. There are narratives that are being crafted to divide us, to make it look like there is this huge racism problem in America, and yet we're ignoring the facts. I'm not saying there isn't hatred in America. I'm not saying there isn't racism in America. I'm not saying that most people aren't racist. I mean, I cannot say that there is zero, you know, what we're calling racism within me. I can't say that I don't have some latent racist tendencies within me. And yet I don't believe I act on them. And I'm not guilty of the actions of our, you know, even saying our forefathers. I mean, I don't know what my great, 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 great grandparents' involvement was as far as the slave trade. I don't know mm-hmm. where they were and what they thought of it and how they acted. And if they had, I mean, you know, we don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even know if just because I'm white, that means I'm descended from slaveholders. But what we do know is that every weekend in Chicago, many dozens, perhaps, of black people are gunned down by black people. And in cities and towns all over the nation, dozens and hundreds of white people every year are murdered by other light-skinned people. But we ignore that, and we selectively get outraged over what, in all honesty, is a very rare occurrence of a white police officer killing a black man or woman, usually man, in the line of duty. And when it happens, and look, the whole thing with George Floyd and in Minneapolis, everything that I can tell, from my perspective, everything that I can see about what went on there is that he was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem just to me at all.
Mm-mm.
And justice should be carried out.
Absolutely.
To me, that's a murder. I could be wrong about that, you know, but from what I can tell, the video, I didn't watch the video. I don't need to see that kind of stuff. But reading all of the descriptions and looking at the pictures and hearing people talk about it, it seems pretty clear to me it was a murder.
Mm-hmm.
That he was murdered. And so I'm not saying it doesn't happen. We don't know that it was racially motivated.
But why is it blasted mm-hmm. all over?
Right.
Because I bet you could find another incident of mm-hmm. similar thing happened with different skin colored people.
You sure could. And again, you're going to be accused of being racist just because you brought that. I know. Just because you said that.
I know.
But yeah, there is hatred, murder, violence, rape. All of these things happen on a daily basis, both within common skin colors and across skin colors. So to make the focus be about race and racism is just to create division where, mm-hmm. frankly, none is needed because there's already plenty of it
right.
naturally occurring.
Right.
We don't need to fabricate division within our nation,
for example. No, because we have hatred in our hearts.
Right.
We're born with that. We're born with that sin.
It exists anyway. It doesn't need to be glorified. Fanned into a huge flame because it's already there. Mm-hmm. A few more things that we want our children to know, that we want to teach our children. Don't hate someone based on skin color. I mean, that seems so basic, right? But like, it's worth saying, it's worth talking to our children about that and helping them to try to recognize when they're doing that and to teach them away from that. And also, don't hate those who treat you differently because of skin color. You may have that. People will talk about being pulled over for driving while black and some of these things. I am not going to say that none of that exists.
Right.
Right? It's quite likely that dark-skinned people do experience in America different treatment. They are in the minority. We could talk about the reasons that that happens, but I'm not saying it doesn't happen. But what I'm going to teach my children is when someone treats you differently because of skin color, you are not to hate that person, right? The Bible says, love your enemies. If someone is going to set themselves up against you as your enemy because of your skin color, that's on them. But as soon as you own that and turn it into hatred
towards them,
that's on you. So let God deal with them if they're racist. And they treat you differently because of your race, but you don't hate them. I mean, we're going to teach our children that the police are not their enemy. Again, there are good seeds and bad seeds out there, right? If there are systemic issues within police forces across America or in certain cities, whatever, then those should be dealt with. Absolutely. Especially if we can actually find real evidence that that is the case, then absolutely it needs dealt with. And, you know, I'm not opposed to reforming police departments, and there's a lot of work that could be done there. But in general, what I want my children to know is the police are not your enemy. And that is actually something we've had to teach them.
Yeah. When we first met our children, they would see a police car and cry.
Mm-hmm.
They would hide. They thought it was bad. They thought police were coming for them. There was a wide variety of their mixed signals, emotions of what the police were. And
right. And what I would want to say about that, though, is I wasn't there for their early years. So this is me piecing it back together. So this is my perspective on it. But their feelings towards the police were not based on actual bad experiences with the police that they had. As far as we can tell, they never had any bad experiences with police. But what they did have was a culture of fear and hatred towards police. They were taught that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, that we know of, at least one experience where a close family member of theirs who was a violent criminal was caught in the act of violent crime and was taken away by police. But in that situation, it wasn't the police that were wrong. It was their family member that was wrong. So for them to have this fear of the police was caused by other factors, not by the actions of the police officers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was irrational, and we've had to teach them, and that's not the case anymore. They don't have those reactions at all.
No.
In fact, quite the opposite. We want our children to know that no one owes them anything because of their skin color. What I'm talking about is this idea of entitlement. And the reverse of that is true. I want my children to understand that they don't owe anyone anything because of skin color. And I'm talking to both my white children and my black children when I say this, right? Just like nobody owes them anything because of skin color, they don't owe anyone else because of their skin color or because of somebody else's skin color.
Mm-hmm. I think a good example where we actually could live that out is with your current job employer. Just because you have a high position in your company doesn't mean that your kid is automatically going to get that position. And I think in the right state of mind, you can say, yeah, I'll hire him. He needs to be good work, or they're not going to work out. You know, like, I think we have that lens in a sense that our kid's not going to just be hired just because he's your kid.
I think what we're getting at is we want them to understand that they should expect to work for the things that they have, mm-hmm. for the things that they need. One of the common refrains that we take from scripture and we talk about in our home is whoever's not willing to work
will not eat.
Will not eat. How often do our children shirk their responsibility? And, you know, look, we're pretty gracious about this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we extend a lot of patience before we make this decision. But if a kid is not willing to do a job that he's been given, then guess what? He doesn't get food on his plate at the next meal. Because we want our children to understand that they have a responsibility to work for the things that they need. Don't expect a handout.
Right.
Don't expect someone to pity you and think, oh, you poor black person. Or, oh, you poor white person. Whatever. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this can apply to a lot of different situations. So I'm not just talking about black person, don't expect a handout. I'm saying just in life in general, don't expect a handout. Nobody owes you anything. And they don't owe it to you based on skin color. They don't owe it to you because you're the grandson of the company owner. You need to work for the things that you're going to have. And sure, there may be times that you get a leg up. There may be times that you get a shot at something that somebody else doesn't get a shot at. But you still have to work to keep it.
Right.
You can lose it. It could be taken away from you. You don't get to just slough off and have things handed to you.
Right.
Sadly, that sense of entitlement can become a cultural thing where people who are not expected to work, not expected to be responsible, to take responsibility for their own lives and their own needs, they can receive handouts and then they become entitled. They expect those things. They think that they deserve those things. Maybe not because of their skin color, but it does happen. It's a cultural thing. And I don't want my children to think that way and to expect that people are just going to hand them things.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to learn to work hard. We don't want them to think, I can just avoid responsibility and someone else will take care of me. Or my great, 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 great grandpa was a slave. Therefore, someone owes me something. And that's not to say that slavery didn't cause real issues that still carry through to today. That's possible. We could have that conversation, but I don't want my children thinking that someone owes them a handout
mm-hmm.
because of their skin color or for any other reason.
We've seen that at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad that it was already learned. You know, even today, we still deal with that with one of our children in the sense that something is hard. They throw a fit. They get sassy. They get mad. And we'll just sit there and pause until I do it for them or they think I'm going to do it for them. And to me, it just goes to show the lack of the ability to put forth any effort. It's too hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to sit here and feel sorry for myself and not do anything about it and cry and try to have someone else do it for me. And it is, I really think that started at a young age or they try to get someone to feel sorry for them. And it's amazing how manipulative it can get.
Well, it is a part of our sin nature. We like to be lazy.
Yeah.
We don't like to work hard. And so the child's bent might be to complain and hope someone else will fix the problem for them. But then it's learned and reinforced
right. Because
it works.
Mm-hmm.
And once it works over the course of years, then it's planted pretty deep.
Right.
In your way of thinking to the point where, yeah, anytime there's something hard, you throw yourself down and say you can't do it. And then you wait for somebody else to pick you up. And what we're saying is they need to take responsibility for themselves. They need to pick themselves up. They need to do the work that's necessary. Now that does not negate the grace of God. I mean, we understand the gospel, right? We can't earn our way to God.
Mm-mm.
Salvation is by grace. So when we are truly humbled, broken over our sin, and we come humbly to God, repentant, it is entirely an act of his grace to forgive us, to pick us up, to give us his Holy Spirit, and to set us back on the right path.
Mm-hmm.
But then we continue on and we work and we take responsibility and we fail and he forgives us and he enables us to continue to work. So when I say that, when I say we want our kids to pick themselves up and do the work that's necessary, I'm not negating the grace of God when it comes to the saving of our souls. I'm saying, in life, you have to work hard and you can't expect people to just give you things, especially not because of your skin color. And the flip side, they don't owe anyone else anything because of skin color. Whether white or black, you don't owe someone anything just because of your skin color. And we could talk about a lot of different things, but one of the ways that that can happen, particularly in the black community, is that a lot of people try to pretend that black skin is monolithic in the sense of everyone thinks this way. Everyone has the same values. Everyone votes the same way. This is the political party of the blacks. And so presidential candidate Joe Biden, a few weeks back, he's being interviewed by a black guy and he's saying, look, if you're struggling to decide who you're going to vote for, you ain't black. Well, his whole point was, this is a given. I am from the party of the black people. And so therefore, if you have black skin, you vote for me. There's no question about it. And I want to teach our children, look, no one deserves your vote just because of your skin color. And to me, it's not mostly about voting. I use that example, but that's not really my point. I mean, you can't let people tell you that you have to think or act in a certain way because of the color of your skin. And it's the same. Don't let anybody tell you that because of your white skin, therefore you are racist or anything like that. You don't owe anyone your vote. You don't owe anyone your allegiance. You don't have to talk a certain way just because of the color of your skin. Don't let someone tell you that there's a black way of talking.
You know, just something recently, just with the way the culture is right now, something that I have been thinking about is, you know, we're in this state of, we don't know who to believe, we don't know who to trust, we don't know what's right, we don't know what's wrong, what's fake news, what's news. And I really want our children to be able to think for themselves and to think through a biblical lens, ultimately. And so putting whatever situation they're up against to think logically. And if they're not sure, research, read. Don't read just in favor of the way you're leaning, but also read in favor of the way that you're opposed to, and put it up against God's word and make the choice.
Mm-hmm.
What does God have to say about this? And research it. Think. Force yourself to think. Just Googling just one little thing and reading one little thing isn't going to do it. Take the time.
We don't want their thinking and acting to be inside this bubble where I look to someone else to tell me what to think.
Mm-hmm.
Even to your parents. Yes, we try to instill truth in them, but we also tell them, look, don't just take my word for it. Research it out for yourself. Don't just think mom and dad are going to do the thinking for me. Therefore, my job is done. I'm just going to kind of blindly follow. We don't want that either.
Mm-mm. Just don't take our word for it. Learn. Study. You know, it's okay to disagree with someone who might be the same color as you. Take the time and realize that people are at division. And a lot of times the reason they're at division is because they just don't know. And they'd rather be fed yes or no. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't actually sit and think about things. Like, they don't study it out. Sadly, that's one of the reasons why there is so much mess and chaos. Is
so much division.
Yeah, that people just want to be spoon-fed something without actually thinking logically, studying it out, researching, asking questions. You know, sometimes I get so frustrated with what our kids, they want to ask us all these questions all the time. And
right.
I'm like, ay, 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 I don't know. And some of them are too small to actually like go and research it themselves. And so it's like, I have to stop, think about it, try to formulate an answer, you know, because we're not quite at the point where we could say, why don't you go look in the Bible and figure this out?
Sure.
Now, some of them we could.
Well, there's a great need for discernment in the world. And that's, I think, what you're trying to say.
Yeah,
that's what you are
probably
saying. No, sorry, I shouldn't have said it that way. We want our children to learn discernment, not just to hear what someone says and just receive it as truth. Because sadly, the world is full of liars. And we're all guilty of that.
Yep. Hypocrites, liars.
Right. I work very hard to be a truth teller. And at the same time, I can exaggerate. I can share part of the truth. When I'm telling a story, I can round up a little bit when it's in my favor, and I can round down a little bit when it's not. And these little, I hate to even call them little because it makes it sound like I'm minimizing them, but these are things that all of us are guilty of.
Right.
All of us do this. And then far worse, sadly, there are whole groups of people, whole political parties or media agencies or other organizations that just plain don't tell the truth. And it's sad, but we want our children to know, like, consider the fact that the person who's saying this thing might not be telling the truth, or if it seems like the things that they say are causing division, maybe consider the fact that though they claim to be working for protection and justice and reconciliation and all of these things, consider the fact that they may actually be profiting from division.
Right.
There's a lot of distrust for the media in general in our nation, and I think a lot of that's justified. And I'm not picking on, you know, one particular network or anything like that. But just for example, this is testable. This is something that you could look into and find people saying that this is accurate. We hear a lot about police shootings. There are 320 million some people in America, right? And police shootings are very rare, but they do happen. And when they happen, it's not uncommon for a media agency, news channel, whatever it is, to hear about some event that happens, to contact the authorities that were involved. And the first question that they ask is, what was the race of the person that was shot? And if the answer is, oh, they were white or they were Hispanic or whatever, okay, thanks, click, that's it. Don't want to hear the rest. But hey, the person had black skin. They're all over it. Sadly, violence sells, right? Blood sells. Mm-hmm. If you want to sell a newspaper or the news show on your TV station, people like blood. They like violence. The people writing these articles and producing these news briefings, whatever, they know what we like to see and hear. And so it's natural, and I don't mean natural in a good way, but it's natural that they're going to sell you what they think you want. And they may be feeding you bits of truth, but only bits, not the whole story. And so if there are 5 police shootings in a given city in 1 month, and 4 of them, and I'm not even saying these are real statistics mm-hmm. or that this is actually the rate that this happens, but 4 of those are unarmed white people, and one of them is an armed black man, they might focus on the one because that's what sells. That's what's right. Hot right now. Go with the hot hand. This is what's selling.
It's just like advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, best deals, best ads, best whatever. It catches your eye.
Right.
It catches your ear.
I recognize that in myself just when I'll scroll through a website on my phone, you know, a news site or an app. If I'm scrolling through on my phone, even though I really, like, I'd rather not read these gory details in certain articles, they're the ones that catch my eye.
Right.
And I find myself reading and clicking 2 or 3 articles about some gruesome thing that happened. It somehow is intriguing. Anyway, we want to tell our children, look, just be wary of people who might actually just be profiting off of division.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be media, it might be a politician, it might be an organization like Black Lives Matter. Of course we believe Black Lives Matter, but the organization doesn't believe that. They believe some Black Lives Matter, but they don't care about the lives of Black people who don't agree with their agenda.
In fact, they speak out against them.
Right. You know, we follow enough people between social media and other news outlets, or just people we know personally. And I hear the stories of dark-skinned people who are called awful names by other dark-skinned people simply for not agreeing with them, for not holding to the prevailing narrative or the prevailing mm-hmm. way of thinking. They get called things like coon and nigger by other Black people, or just other terrible things like that, simply because they don't hold the party line. These people who are supposedly saying Black Lives Matter and demanding that we all say Black Lives Matter, they are selective about which Black Lives Matter to them. Not going to take the time to get into all of that, but hopefully that's enough of a teaser that somebody might go look into that a little bit, you know? And, well, does this organization really feel that way?
Right. You don't see them proclaiming all Black Lives Matter.
No, not at all. And that gets into, I guess this is kind of the last thing that I had on my list of notes of things that I wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
The focus of the conversation around race and racism is all about the racism of white Americans. So we don't hear about racism in other nations, other parts of the world. And in some sense, that's fair because we're talking about our nation. We're talking about where we live.
Yeah.
Right. But there's so much harping on the history of racism in America and the present racism in America. But when that subject comes up, all anybody wants to talk about is racism on the part of white people. And some people would even outright reject the idea that Black people can be racist because they're a minority and supposedly an oppressed minority in our country. people don't even want to acknowledge the fact that a black person can be racist. All of the focus is only on white Americans and what they've done, the racist things that they've done. I've said this before, maybe even earlier in this episode. It's been so long, I can't remember. But I've said this before just in life. It's infuriating to me. I have no recollection of ever learning in school when studying the history of America, slave trade, racism, civil war, all of this kind of stuff. I have no recollection of the fact that in the slave trade, when mostly white Europeans were taking slaves from Africa and delivering them to various parts of the world, particularly the Americas, mm-hmm. I have no recollection of the fact that most of those Africans who were sold into slavery were actually sold to the Europeans by other blacks in Africa. They were already slaves in their own land. They had been taken captive by their own people and then were sold for profit to other people who continued to enslave them, who then sold them to other people who continued to enslave them. And that just infuriates me that that's not part of the conversation. We want to make such a big deal about the history of slavery and racism in America, and yet we don't want to deal with the fact that other people are racist too, and that other people have been slaveholders too, and that blacks in America who are descended from slaves, their ancestors actually enslaved them first and sold them as slaves. And secondly, that it's not only white people who purchased them. There were black slaveholders in America, not as common, and then in other parts of the world too. So it's not only white Americans who enslaved people, and they weren't alone in the slave trade.
So if you could sum it up, what would be one or two key things you want our children to know right now about race, about what's going on in our country?
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of wrap it up.
Yeah, great question. First of all, I want them to understand that God made all of us and we descend from one man and woman, Adam and Eve. There is one human race. And when you commit to that understanding, when you understand that, it makes a lot of the rest of this conversation easier to sift through. When you reject this racist evolutionary idea of different races and more or less evolved, more or less capable, it's just so much easier to see through some of the lies in this conversation when you start with that foundation that, look, all of us are made in the image of God. Every one of us, black, white, somewhere in between, everyone on the spectrum of darkness of pigmentation and skin was made in the image of God. And so all of our lives matter to God and should matter to one another. And certainly when there is a group who is being separated out and hated for their skin color, absolutely, we should pause and recognize the plight of our human brothers and sisters and what they might be going through and consider how we can change that. But we have to do it through a biblical lens.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do it through the understanding of the reason this life matters is because it was made in the image of God. And yet most of the people out there who are claiming to be seeking the good of black people actually reject that, don't want anything to do with that truth, and have an entirely different foundation. The Bible says there's a way that seems right to man, but its end is death.
Right.
It goes the way of death. The way that seems right to man leads to death. And so if you're going to build your philosophy of race and racism on human thinking, and you're going to reject the truth of God, then you're not actually going to do anyone any good, and you're actually going to cause great destruction. And I think the other thing that I would want to say in summary is you are responsible for you.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things we say to our children a lot. We come across a situation where two or three kids are doing something they're not supposed to be doing, and we talk to one of them and we say, you know, hey, why were you not obeying us? You were supposed to be picking up, or you know you're not supposed to be throwing rocks or whatever it is, right? Why weren't you obeying? Well, so-and-so was doing this and I saw them and so I just joined in with them. Look, so-and-so is responsible for themselves, for their self. Your brother, your sister, they're accountable to me. They're accountable to God on their own. Your job is to obey. When everyone else disobeys,
you obey.
You obey. When everyone around you is going their own way, you go God's way. You obey what God has told you to do. You obey. You honor your father and mother. even if you're the only child in the family doing so. And so I want my children to understand personal responsibility. They can't depend on someone else to carry them through this life. They can't depend on someone else to do their thinking for them or to do their hard work for them. But they will stand before God as an individual and give an account for their life. But it's on you to make the right decisions, to follow after God, to work hard, to take responsibility for yourself, and with the energy that you have left over, to love and care for others. Mm-hmm. So I guess that would be my summary of these couple of episodes, this really long conversation that we're splitting into two. So I imagine you would probably agree pretty closely with those, with my answer to that question. But what about you? Do you have anything that you would add to that beyond what I've said?
I think I would emphasize, you know, just God's greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Right. And if anything, that's what I want for my children. Love your neighbor as yourself.
Right.
Your neighbor, your brother sitting next to you in the van,
mm-hmm.
or your neighbor across the street.
Whether or not they look like you.
Exactly. And just to know that God created them. And mm-hmm. we trust God in what he did and what he does. And we can be satisfied with that. And it's not up to us to say he matters, she matters, they matter. Mm-hmm. It's God already told us we're to love our neighbors
mm-hmm.
and they all matter.
Right. Because if you go to that passage, when Jesus says, love your neighbor, what's the response that he gets? Well, Lord, who is my neighbor?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because we have a tendency to want to separate out people we like. We have a tendency to not want to love all of our neighbors, but just certain neighbors. And Jesus's point was, be a neighbor. I mean, it's the Good Samaritan, right? The person that you don't expect, the person that might seem like they're not your neighbor, they're your neighbor too. So in other words, you're to love and care for every human life.
Even your enemy. Love your enemies.
Right. Every human life, born and unborn, black, white, olive colored, tan, brown, red. Oh, that's offensive. Not supposed to say people have red skin. All right. So if you made it all the way to the end of this super long conversation, then we just want to thank you. And we hope that you will interact with us. We've had so far more people listening to our podcasts than I actually even expected. And so I think that's great. And I look forward to people asking us questions, sending us messages and interacting with the things that we say and asking, suggesting things that we should talk about. That would really be enjoyable for us if we got to, you know, do a whole episode or even just spend a little bit of time answering a question that someone has or addressing a subject that's of interest to them.
Fun.
Yeah, it would be good.
Question and answer time. That'd be fun.
And I guess this kind of was that because like you said, we've had friends who have asked us how we're dealing with this race and racism thing and everything that's going on in our nation, in our communities right now. And so that's kind of a question that we're answering.
Okay.
Well, thanks for sticking it out. We're thankful for you. Hope you come back again.
All right. Peace out, Brook Trout.
Peace.